from Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, October 15th, 2021.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody, serving generations of Maine families and businesses from offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland.
Lobstermen and conservationists are awaiting a high-stakes court decision on a plan to bar lobster trap rope from a nearly 1,000-square-mile area off Maine's coast. The federal restriction is set to go into effect on Monday and last through the end of January. It's the first in a series of new federal rules aimed at reducing the risk that North Atlantic right whales will be injured or killed by entanglement and trap rope and gear. The Trenton-based Maine Lobstering Union is calling for a temporary injunction of the restricted zone. That's to prevent irreparable harm to the industry while the merits of the rule are adjudicated. Federal District Court Judge Lance Walker heard arguments on both sides this morning, saying he would issue a decision on the injunction, quote, very soon. The Maine CDC is reporting 551 new coronavirus infections today. Five more Mainers have died from the disease. The seven-day average of new cases is now 405, the second day in a row that number has increased after it had been trending downward for the last 2 weeks. There were 167 people hospitalized with COVID-19 yesterday. 57 were in critical care and 29 were on ventilators. With only hours to go until a Friday deadline for University of Maine System students to be vaccinated, about 380 students have yet to verify their status. Chancellor Daniel Malloy says that many of those students have likely already left the school at some point earlier in the semester, but the system plans to continue reaching out to students over the next few days to ensure that they know the consequences of not being in compliance.
Right now, we're in the process of just trying to make sure on a one-on-one contact basis, to the extent that's possible, that students are aware that they're putting their education in danger. And we'll take a few more days to get that done, because I think we owe it to them at least to attempt a one-on-one conversation.
If students don't show that they've received at least one vaccine shot or apply for a medical, religious, or remote learning exemption, the system says they'll have to withdraw from their fall classes without a refund. About 650 students have requested religious exemptions from the mandate, and about 60 have requested a medical exemption. Those students will still be required to be regularly tested if they want to stay on campus. Fall is peak time for deer tick activity in Maine, and the state CDC is urging residents and visitors to take precautions to limit exposure. Deer ticks are found in wooded, leafy, shrubby areas, including yards, and can transmit several diseases. Lyme disease and anaplasmosis are the most common. But a record 163 cases of babesiosis have been reported this year, as well as 3 cases of Powassan encephalitis. Symptoms of tick-borne diseases include body aches, chills, and fever. Lyme disease can also cause a bullseye rash around a tick bite. To avoid contact, the CDC recommends wearing repellent as well as light-colored clothing that covers arms with pants tucked into socks. Tick checks should be performed after any outdoor activity. Central Maine Healthcare's board has appointed Stephen Littleson as system president and CEO. Littleson has served as interim president and CEO since July after joining the healthcare organization in 2020 as the head of Central Maine Medical Center in Lewiston. He's leading CMH during a challenging time. This week, Central Maine Medical Center, one of 3 hospitals in the system, cut back services in the wake of more than 80 staff resignations over the state's COVID-19 vaccination mandate. Pediatric admissions have been suspended until further notice, and the ability for CMMC to admit cardiac and trauma patients is fluid. The hospital will close its neonatal intensive care unit on October 25th. And in the weather tonight, humid, foggy, and drizzly, lows in the 50s statewide. Tomorrow, very muggy with some light showers and wind, highs in the upper 50s to low 70s north to south. The sister of a man fatally shot by police in Augusta on Wednesday night says he had Asperger syndrome, which affected his ability to communicate, and that he might still be alive if the officers involved had taken a different approach during the incident. Carol Bousquet reports.
Augusta Police Chief Jared Mills says Sergeant Christopher Blodgett and Officer Sebastian Guptill had little time to react when they encountered 34-year-old Dustin Parody holding a knife Wednesday night outside an Augusta homeless shelter. Mills says the situation turned dangerous quickly and officers shot and killed him at the scene. Stephanie Parody, Dustin's younger sister, says her brother was a kind, gentle man who held a job and had his own apartment before a romantic breakup left him homeless. Parody says her brother had Asperger syndrome and that if the shelter or police had called his family, they would have been able to calm him down and defuse the tense situation and not resort to deadly force.
To pull out a gun instead of a taser is not okay, and not for two police officers to shoot at him at the same exact time. I live closer to the shelter than the police station that's up the road. And if they would have called us, this wouldn't have happened.
Augusta police say they do train officers in de-escalation techniques. But Brian Pittman, assistant professor of sociology and criminal justice at the University of Maine, says focusing on police training doesn't get at the root causes of these confrontations. Pittman says community supports must be in place so those with mental illness get treatment before their actions incite a police response.
We know that if we invest in the community, if we invest in things like healthcare and employment and people's overall well-being, that these interactions would happen less, that crime would happen less.
This is the fourth shooting involving police in Maine in a month. Officers Blodgett and Guptill are on paid administrative leave while the Attorney General's office investigates the use of deadly force. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
And it's now time for Maine's Political Pulse, our weekly roundup and analysis of politics and government.
Welcome back to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Maine Public's Statehouse Bureau Chief and Chief Political Correspondent, Steve Missler. You know, I've heard it said the personal is the political. Well, in the pandemic, it's the medical that's become the political. The latest evidence starts with Central Maine Medical announcing it will curtail some services because too few of its workers are vaccinated. Steve, how does that turn into a political issue?
Well, in this instance, Erwin, it turns into a political issue because it's an evolution of this debate over vaccine requirements for healthcare workers. Republicans have been laying the groundwork for this ever since August, when Governor Janet Mills announced that all healthcare workers need to get vaccinated for COVID, just as they do for other transmissible diseases. Now, that announcement sparked several protests, including one here at the state capitol that was emceed by several Republican legislators who basically framed this requirement as an infringement of personal liberty. Some of them also compared it to the medical experiments performed on Jews during the Holocaust. We've discussed that quite a bit before. In this instance, Republicans are saying this requirement is worsening the healthcare worker shortage, and they also say it could lead to deaths. They propose that the governor should give these workers an option for regular testing. The entire party apparatus flogged this critique all week. And of course, former Governor Paula Page also got into the action, which is probably the whole point of this exercise. Now, Governor Mills is not having any of this. She says the whole point of the requirement is to protect healthcare workers, their patients, and their respective families. There have been more than 300 outbreaks at healthcare facilities across the state. A lot of healthcare workers have gotten sick, many before we had vaccines. And Mills is also blaming Republicans for not using their influence to persuade their constituents to get their shots. She says not doing so is an abdication of their duty as elected officials.
You know, I wonder about two things. First, is there any downside to former Governor Paula Page and Minority Leader Jeffrey Timberlake if COVID variants keep sending waves of sickness sweeping through the population?
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious downside is that many of their voters could get sick or die. And I say that because all of this fight comes against a pretty sobering backdrop, and it's twofold. One, the Kaiser Family Foundation this week reported that 90,000 Americans who have died since July likely wouldn't have if they were vaccinated. Two, Kaiser also reported last month that there's this deepening partisan divide over vaccines. It's been widening since vaccines became available in April, and you really don't have to look very far to see why that divide exists. There's a ton of rhetoric that promotes vaccine skepticism or outright anti-vaccine conspiracy theories, and it's targeted directly at conservative audiences, whether it's on social media or broadcast media. I mean, some of it is promoted by elected GOP officials, some right here in Maine, and of course, across the country. And, you know, now there are some Republicans, and including LePage, by the way, who are trying to stake out this sort of middle ground, which is that they support vaccines, but they also support a person's right to refuse them. And, you know, as we've discussed before, you know, the problem with that position is that it often nuzzles right up with anti-vaccine conspiracies. And you can see it even at some of these demonstrations. You know, there'll be somebody holding a "Don't Tread on Me" flag standing right next to someone holding up a sign saying Bill Gates created vaccines to control the world population or some other thing.
You know, the second thing I wonder about is we are still a year away from the next election involving the governor and other high offices in Maine. If COVID fades in the next year, then does all this vaccine ruckus lose its political punch?
You know, I've thought a lot about that, Erwin. You know, I think the issue of vaccines could fade if we can somehow avoid another variant that possibly makes the vaccines we have less effective. That's the danger here. You know, we ended up with Delta because the virus just ran wild pre-vaccine and then mutated. But I think for Republicans, the vaccine issue feeds into a larger portrait of Mills that they're trying to construct, which is that her pandemic approach has been executive fiat, strident, and resulting in an infringement of personal liberty and harmful to the economy. That's the game plan right there. You know, Mills, like other Democrats, is trying to counter that by calling Republicans obstructionists in resisting public health measures and for not doing their part to promote the vaccines that can get this thing under control.
You know, after former President Donald Trump got to appoint three Supreme Court justices, many on the left have been fearful of what this strongly conservative court may do, and perhaps with good reason. Steve, First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree is proposing to do something about it.
She is, although I have to say it's a long shot bid, to be sure. She announced this week that she's signing on to a bill that would expand the court from its existing 9 seats to 13 seats. She's one of 36 Democrats to sign on to this bill. Of course, as you just noted, this bill is born out of this sense among Democrats that the court has become too conservative, too political, and poses too grave a threat to issues like abortion rights and voting rights in particular. Republicans see it much differently, probably because they've worked pretty hard to get this 6-3 majority on the court, you know, going so far as to block President Obama's court pick during his last year in office. But setting aside the partisan divide, there's actually a real debate going on about whether expanding the court would achieve its intended purpose, which is to depoliticize the, you know, the law court. Just yesterday, the Biden administration released a report saying that an expansion actually poses considerable risks to further politicizing the law court. That same report took a more positive view of, you know, enacting term limits on justices. You know, either way, these kind of changes are not going to happen anytime soon unless, you know, Republicans somehow remain in the minority of in Congress, you know, through the next election. And that seems unlikely. But one last note here, Erwin, you know, to say that, you know, which that Congress can expand the court without a constitutional amendment. It's done, and it's done so 7 times, but just not since 1869.
Steve Missler is Maine Public's chief political correspondent. He writes a Maine's Political Pulse newsletter you can find at mainepublic.org. It's updated on Friday mornings, and we'll email it to you as well. We have a podcast that gets updated on Fridays. You can find it as well at mainepublic.org or wherever you hear your podcasts. I'm Erwin Gratz, Maine Public Radio News.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on the next Maine Calling, Monday at 11 o'clock, we'll have the latest Maine political news, from the referendum questions on next month's election to the latest on next year's high-profile races for governor and Maine's 2nd District congressional seat. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening.